Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Now Bali podcast with me, Eddie Spears. I appreciate your patience for this episode. As many know, Bali has been in a difficult situation with lockdowns and of course the ongoing lack of tourism caused by the COVID-19 pandemic here on the island. So we at Now Bali have had to work hard to be creative and keep moving forward like the rest of the island residents. Anyway, I believe we have a really valuable episode for you today as we explain an aspect of Bali which is ubiquitous but rarely understood. This is the Subak, a socio-cultural water-sharing system that is responsible for the fertile harvests of Bali's rice fields. Today we'll explain what the Subak system really entails and how important it really is to Bali's culture. So, after such a long wait, thanks for listening in to the Now Bali podcast once again. We appreciate your support. Also, a thank you to Genesis Creative Center, where we are recording this episode in their Pioneer DJ music studio. Now, on with the show. Bali is synonymous with rice fields. Vast landscapes sculpted by bare hands and pitchforks, following the contours of the land, from deep terraced valleys to the flat plotted pools that dot the roadsides. To visitors, they are an aesthetic accoutrement, part of the decoration that solidifies Bali's paradisal reputation. A simple vista, or the stage upon which the local farmers perform. In truth, these fields of green and gold are part of something much greater. Not only do they produce the most important sustenance in Indonesia, rice, these paddy fields are the physical representation of a Balinese Hindu philosophy. This is precisely why Jatiluwi, the 600 hectares of rice fields in Tabanan, is included in the UNESCO World Heritage List. It is listed as a cultural landscape. What does that even mean? It refers to the Subak water-sharing system and how the rice fields are the manifestation of the Balinese Tri Hita Karana philosophy, the three elements of well-being, God, nature, and people, that must be in balance and in harmony with one another. So how exactly does the Subak, a water sharing or irrigation system, represent the relationship between God, nature, and people? That's what we're hoping to explain today. The exact origins of the Subak system in Bali is still in question, but inscriptions date its existence on the island anywhere between the years 882 AD and 1072 AD. That's 1,000 years the Subak has been part of the Balinese agrarian society. At the simplest level, the Subak system aims to distribute water to all rice farmers in a given area, in a fair and democratic manner. For this to happen, two things must be accurately organized: the physical distribution of this water, and also the social organization for this system to run properly. Simultaneously, religious ceremonies and rituals are imbued into both the physical and social systems. Let's begin with the physical structure of the Subak. A Subak is a group of paddy fields that obtains water from the same source. One Subak will, on average, cover an area of 100 hectares. But Subaks in Bali range anywhere from 4 to 600 hectares. Normally the boundaries of a Subak are natural features, be it the watershed of a catchment area, or creeks, or valleys, or rivers. There are even different categories for Subaks depending on their size and also where they are located along a major river, i.e. if they're upstream or if they're downstream. But what's most important is the internal structure of each individual subak, as well as the journey which water takes through this physical system. Starting from the main source of water, normally a river, a weir or a dam is built to divert water into a canal constructed by the farmers themselves. These canals might be diverted several times before finally spilling into a specific rice field plot. Each farmer might have several plots, and so within their section of the subak, their plots will be connected by ingenious little aqueducts, bamboo pipes, or underground tunnels that run across ditches and under roads. At certain scheduled times, one farmer will then spill his water into another farmer's section, and this continues until all have had their fair share of water. The last farmer in the rotation will then return the water back into the main source of water, downriver. Now this is really quite an engineering feat. Imagine these vast areas with vine-like networks sharing water through ditches and embankments at agreed-upon times, using simple tools to divert, block, or build up water through the system. Now throughout this network, from top to bottom, there are also specific temples that are placed at certain spots where the water is diverted. We'll talk about this in detail later. What comes hand in hand with this complex physical structure of a subak is that it requires a lot of management. This is done by the subak organization, a democratic structure of people, each assigned to different responsibilities. Now, the members of the subak organization all have different levels of interaction. There are those who work directly on the farm, referred to as the seka, those that fund farming activities, called the pengampel, and a group who are involved in periphery work, called leluputan, such as the temple priests. Interestingly, each subak has its own laws. These are called awik-awik, and are either scribed into lontar manuscripts, or passed down as an oral tradition. Each subak organization has the autonomy to create their own awik-awik, pertaining to farming duties, crop scheduling, water rotation, collective group work, how they settle conflict, or discipline members, and of course, religious duties too. Even within the seka, i.e. the group directly involved in working on the farms, there are different categorizations. This is because a rice field has different needs depending on the time of the season. You have the seka tandur, who transplant rice, the seka manyi, who harvest rice, the seka sambang, who supervise the water usage, and so on. The level of mutual work and cooperation, this Indonesian concept of gotong royong, is taken to new levels in the rice fields. There is also a very defined hierarchy within the organization, which involves a subak head, treasurers, and group leaders. An integral component of the subak organization is the religious ceremonies that must be performed by farmers and members. This alone is complex, with different rituals required for different times in the harvest, but also taking place at different temples. For the Balinese Hindu, there are some principal deities that must be addressed to ensure a fertile rice harvest. These include Dewi Sri, the goddess of rice, Dewi Danu, the goddess of the lake, as lakes are the source of most irrigation water, the god Vishnu, as water is said to symbolize him. This is just to name a few. Prayers and offerings are done to ask for blessing, as well as to placate potential destruction. There are 16 different rituals that must be conducted by each subak organization, all for different reasons. At the start of the planting season, when the water is first distributed into the farmers' canals, a Mapag Toya ritual is conducted as a group. Then you have other group ceremonies like the Pacharuan ceremony, done to prevent disease of the crops, or the Ngusaha ceremony, done 10 days before harvest, as a thank you to the Creator. Then there are other rituals done by certain members of the Subak, like the Pangwiwit ceremony done by the local priests only before seed beds are prepared, or other minor rituals done by the farmers individually at their own plots. To make matters even more complicated, there are mantras which should be chanted to a specific deity, in hopes for a specific result, be it keeping pests away or asking for good fertility, and so on. You will notice too that in and around rice fields, there are often different types of shrines and temples. There is actually a hierarchy of temples, which follow the basic rule that the more upstream a temple is, the more important it is. At the farm level, you will find the simple Sangha Chatu shrines, often made of bamboo or placed where water enters an individual plot. You'll have a more permanent shrine called the Purabudugul, placed where water is diverted at the start of the Subak area. Then you will find a Pura Ulun Sui, found at the original dam when water was first diverted out of the main water source. Then the furthest up the hierarchy are the lake temples, the Pura Ulun Danu, found at Bratan, Batur, Buyan, and Tamlingan lakes. The different members of the Subak perform rituals at the different temples, though all will have to pay at least an annual visit to one of the big lake temples. So, even with this rather simple explanation of the Subak system, we can see how the Trihita-Karana philosophy plays out. The relationship between people must be democratic and fair, because the whole system requires that everyone plays their part. There is no room for conflict or greed or selfishness. This is about mutual growth. The relationship between people and nature is evident, with water being shared and then returned to the river, the land cared for and watched over constantly. Finally, the relationship between people and God, or the godly. This is seen through every step of the rice's growth and at every important physical point of the Subak network. Rituals and temples are part and parcel with the water's journey through the fields and canals. The rice fields of Bali and the Subak system needed to maintain them are physical reminders of these three important relationships: God, people, and nature. Yet, despite the importance, at the end of the day, this cultural system is tied closely to Bali's agrarian way of life, which is at a turning point. The changing land use of Bali, as rice fields vanish and are turned into villas and shop houses, threatens the presence of the Subak system, as well as the many temples and ceremonies that exist exclusively for the harvesting of rice. The farmers too may not see a future in their farms, as new generations find better paying work off of the fields. And why should they not have that right? The land, the people, and the gods are thus interconnected in Bali. When one changes, the rest follow. How much change can Bali withstand before its continuous efforts to retain balance gets tipped too far in the wrong direction? The only way to truly preserve the Subak system is to ensure a lucrative future for the rice farmers, to fairly compensate them for what they really are, beyond just the value of their harvest. Because they are not only the producers of rice, they are the architects of the island's landscape, and they are the protectors of Bali's cultural heritage. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. First and foremost, I hope you found it interesting or insightful. That's the number one goal. We have, of course, simplified the Subak for this explanation, but I believe it's a good roundup of what it entails and why it's important. If you enjoy our podcasts, feel free to check our website for more stories, subscribe to our weekly newsletter, or follow us on Facebook and Instagram. If you want to support us, perhaps you would be interested in purchasing our limited edition magazine, Timeless Bali, a publication for the appreciation of Bali's culture, history, and nature. Thanks again for listening to the Now Bali podcast with me, Eddie Spears. See you next time.